high expectations.
What Stokes has achieved is so special.
Greta Thunberg, Nelson Mandela, even the Jamaican bobsleigh team. They achieved more than anyone believed they could. Peter was one of those people, an unknown, impulsive fisherman who, against all odds, left a legacy that we can still learn from. Maybe if God could use him, he can also raise us above our own expectations. Could we achieve more with him than we think is possible?
Good morning, everybody. Good morning. I don't know about you, I am still reeling from the Mother's Day video. It's like I was sat there on my own going, has anybody got a tissue? I'm kind of trying. And Sam Fennin, that's your fault. Brownie points for Sam Fennin this morning. So great to welcome you here. My name is Mike. As Helen said, we are in the second part of our series, Against All Odds. Steve kicked us off last week, introducing us to this guy called Peter, who was one of Jesus's closest friends and closest disciples. If you missed that, you can catch that up online at forgechurch.com. And, you know, what Steve kind of introduced us to is this unknown fisherman into a life who went into a life of following Jesus, moving from someone who actually for most of his life had kind of been considered as not good enough, to being someone who actually Jesus saw potential in, who actually Jesus chose to build his church upon as we go through Peter's story. And so through this series, we're looking at the parallels of Peter's life with and how he achieved more than what he probably thought was ever possible through following Jesus, and how that can work for us in our lives today, and how we could achieve more than we think is possible. And so today we're going to continue Peter's story, and this time it involves a storm, a boat, a decision, and some rather unexpected water walking. Now, I have to tell you that I think you'd probably call it a healthy respect for water. I don't love it, if I'm honest. And part of that is because I'm not a very good swimmer. I can swim. But as Claire, my wife, would say, that when I do swim, it does genuinely look like I'm drowning. And it does. I have to be honest. I try my best, but it does look like I'm in trouble. And lifeguards often get twitchy when I'm around. I've also not spent that much time on a boat. But I did have quite a memorable experience on a boat in Egypt. We were on a day trip. We were out before COVID. Can you remember those times? We had gone to Egypt as a family on holiday, and we decided to go for a day trip and to apparently swim with dolphins. And so we set off. It was, to be honest, an awful day. And I genuinely thought that rather than swim with dolphins, I thought I was going to die. And I'm not kind of overplaying that. I'm not sort of adding, embellishing the story. I generally thought I was, because it was a beautiful day. We sailed out. We were the only family that didn't suffer with seasickness that day, but everybody else did on the boat. That was nice. We went out, and apparently we eventually found these dolphins. And so a bunch of us got ready. It was supposed to be all of us swimming with dolphins, but me, the worst swimmer of the group, was the only one that actually from our family decided that I was actually going to give it a go. And actually, after I'd given it a go, now I decided that the girls and Claire actually were probably the wise ones in the situation. So there I was, wetsuit, you can imagine this if you want, life jacket, flippers, and a bunch of us jumped in. And it wasn't until I jumped in that I realised actually the waves were quite heavy, you know, it was quite whipping up. And it was like, and then I realised that there was these five other boats, quite big boats around us with similar day trippers all in there trying to find these dolphins. There was these inflatable dinghy speedboats buzzing around all over the place. It was absolute chaos. And not being a hugely confident swimmer, I genuinely thought I might die that day. And so obviously the dolphins had had enough because they'd disappeared. So I didn't even see the dolphins. And so then we had this chaotic moment where you're trying to find the right speedboat dinghy to get back into so you can get back to your correct boat. So there we are, it's all chaos. And then by the time you find your boat, you've got to climb over this dinghy. And it's really difficult and it's really tough, but we managed it. And then there was just this one remaining lady struggling. And it was hard. It was really hard to get. So there we all were, trying to pull her up. She's got a wetsuit, life jacket. We're all in the same gear. The Egyptian guides are all trying to help, trying to pull her over. And it wasn't very easy. And one of the Egyptian guides goes overboard. He recovers and then starts pushing from underneath. And then eventually she kind of flops over the side of this thing. And we're all like relieved. But she's kind of landed on her back, legs everywhere, disorientated. And then we realized that she'd laid across on her back entirely across our flippers. So none of us could move or balance, and then the speedboat jet, you know, sets off to find her, and we all end up landing on top of this poor lady, and we never did see any dolphins. So given all of that, perhaps I'm not the best person to be talking about a story about a boat in a storm and walking on water, but bear with me, and pardon the pun, should we just dive in? So, we find this story in the New Testament. It's in the book of Matthew, which is one of four accounts of Jesus' life that we find right at the very start of the New Testament. And this story happens immediately after the feeding of the 5,000. I'm sure you've heard of that story before. And Jesus has basically sent his disciples out before him on a boat across the lake, Sea of Galilee. And Jesus has remained on land to go and pray alone. So we find the disciples on a boat, and that's where we're going to pick up this story. So as it says in Matthew 14, meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble far away from land, for a strong wind had risen, and they were fighting heavy waves. About 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came toward them, walking on the water. When the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were terrified. In their fear, they cried out, "It's a ghost." But Jesus spoke to them at once. "Don't be afraid," he said. "Take courage. I am here." Now, Peter, he's kind of the first to realize it's Jesus in this situation. Now, as we'll go through Peter's story through this, the rest of this series, Against All Odds, kind of Peter becomes known as this kind of rash, hot-headed, impulsive, kind of instinctive kind of person. And yet in this very moment, he recognizes Jesus. And for a moment, he considers the possibility of what could happen here. He says this, "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." You know, Peter doesn't say, "Lord, I know it's you, I'm coming, look out, make room." You know, he stops and he waits. And he says, "Lord, if it's you." And it's if in that moment, in Peter's head, he's asking this question, "What if? What if?" And this "what if" moment is a really key thought that I want to think about today. He says, because when "what if" pops into our heads, it can prompt a number of different reactions from us. It can prompt different emotions. You see, when we ask "what if" in situations, it can either stop us in our tracks. Well, what if this happens? What's the point in even starting? And you don't even start. Or "what if" can freak us out. What if, it can send us into a bit of a spin. Or "what if" can excite. Well, what if that was to happen? Wouldn't that be amazing? And so "what if" prompts these different emotions. And in this moment, Peter is thinking, "what if?" And he asks Jesus for a word, and that's exactly what Jesus provides. It says this as the verse continues. "Come," Jesus said, "come." No details or directions, no advice or instructions on how to walk on water, just come. What would you do in this situation? Would you choose the water or the boat? What would you choose? Because if you step out from the perceived safety of the boat in a storm to walk on water, which the law of physics would tell you is probably not going to mean that, or probably will mean that you will sink. But as a wise person once said, and as John Ortberg, who wrote a fantastic book that entitled with this phrase, would say, they would say this: if you want to walk on water, you have to get out of the boat. And in this moment, Peter thinks, what if? what if I could walk on water? What if I could achieve something beyond which I could ever imagine? What if I trust this Jesus with this? Despite it being against all odds, what if? And this is the crux of what we're going to look at today, that even if it seems against all odds, if you want to achieve something beyond that which you could ever imagine, if you want to live life to the fullest, if you want to let go of situations or emotions that limit you, you have to get out of your boat. You have to get out of your comfort zone. You have to let go of that which gives you perceived safety but actually limits your life. So let me ask you this. What is your what if moment? What is the area in your own life, perhaps where you need to get out of your boat? And perhaps the first question is, what is your boat? Perhaps we need to recognize that we may be in a boat to start with anyway. And the reality is we probably will all still, we will all have our own boat. Perhaps even boats, as in a plural sense. And the reality is that we will have that. You know, it will be something that represents safety or security to you, apart from God himself. Something that perhaps you escape or retreat to comfort yourself with. Something that you can't or you don't want to give up, even if it's holding you back, even if you keep returning to it. Perhaps your fear may tell you what your boat is. What is that that produces most fear in you, especially when you think about leaving it behind and stepping out? And your boat doesn't have to be something, in a sense, comfortable or, in a sense, positive. It could be an unhealthy habit. It could be an addiction. It could be an unhealthy relationship. It could be an unhealthy obsession with success or money. It could be about being selfish with your time and money because they give you security and you don't want to give those things away. It could be an emotion that you hold on to, that you cling on to, that you feel justified to keep retreating to. You know, something that stops you or you're afraid of letting go of, that's your boat. It's that in which limits your life and what your life could look like because it holds you back. Now, when I was preparing for this, I was thinking about what are the boats in my life or have been in my life, and there was one thing that kept coming through strongly, and believe me, I kept trying to ignore it and trying to think of another example, but for some reason, this kept popping into my head, so I really feel like I need to share it. And this is my boat was a boat based on emotion. And actually that emotion was resentment and anger that in one point in my life was something that was holding me back. And if I hadn't have been able to get out of that boat, it would have always been with me. You see, 10 years ago, my dad passed away. And I've shared this before if you've heard me speak. For 12 to 13 years before that, maybe longer, he had Alzheimer's. And of course, that was tough. We had fun with it, but it was also very, very tough, let's be honest. And in the last moments of his life, for about 36 hours, I think, we as a family were just waiting. To be honest, waiting for him to die. And in this moment, I could just feel this frustration, this anger, this resentment boiling up inside of me that actually had been boiling up over a number of years. And at that point, at that very point, in my head, I was calling out to God, feeling anger, and said, just let him go. Yet the reality was that throughout my life and through Dad's illness, I had bred this resentment and anger, not just towards God, if I'm honest, also towards my dad. And I know that sounds harsh, and I'm not proud in saying that, but it's my reality. And in the last hour of his life, we read Bible passages and we listened to worship music. It was an incredible experience. And my sister suggested that perhaps time was getting close and we needed to perhaps say the last words to Dad. And my mum went first, and she's obviously a very emotional moment, and my sisters followed. And I was sitting the other side of the bed next to my dad, hearing these incredible words being said. And I could just feel this tightness, this resentment, this anger, actually this guilt, that I'd been feeling those things and that I was feeling those things at that moment, and I was panicking. Do you know what? I was in my storm, like the disciples had found themselves. And I was sitting in my boat, but my boat was one of anger and resentment and guilt. And I was thinking, I can't come out with these nice words because I would feel such a hypocrite. And saying to God, you know, God, I can't let go of this. And in that moment, in that storm, Jesus came walking towards the water, walking on the water towards me. And he invited me to come. I might not have known it in that moment, but that's what he did. Come. Let it go. Let it go and come. And so when it came to my turn, when my sisters had finished, that was my what if moment. What if I say this and it comes out wrong? What if I say this and these are the last words he hears? What if I can't? What if? I didn't know what I was going to say in that moment. I genuinely didn't know what I was going to say. But do you know what? All I did was I just poured out my heart. I followed Jesus's invitation to come. And I, in those last moments, I told my dad of those feelings of anger and frustration and resentment that I'd had, and that it hadn't actually just been aimed at God, but also towards him. And that I'd pointed this blame and anger towards him. But I tell you, it didn't stop there, because then came the words of Jesus' invitation to come. Because that wasn't the case. That wasn't the feelings that I had of my dad. I told him that I loved him, that I was sorry, that even if there was nothing to forgive, that I forgave him. That he was my hero and that I loved him so very dearly. And that was the reality of what I thought about my dad. And I don't know really what happened in the next moment, because I just collapsed over him. But in the moment, I know I got out of my boat. And if I had to let go of those things that had been limiting me, that I'd kept retreating to in some kind of justification of how I should feel, or actually self-protection. And shortly after that, my dad passed away. And I know that if I hadn't have done anything, if I'd have stayed in my boat and clung on to this perceived safety of anger and resentment, as bizarre as that may sound, I'd still be holding on to that today. The burden of that would have followed me around for the rest of my life. It would have eaten away at me, and it would have limited my life, and it would have ultimately limited me from being free from that burden. And because I was able to say yes, and I just went for it, he freed me from that burden in that moment with his invitation, Jesus' invitation to come. So I challenge you, what is your boat? Perhaps like me, it's an emotion. Perhaps it's an area of comfort. Perhaps it's an area of addiction. Or it may be something really practical. Like you're in a job that you feel secure in, but ultimately you know you're kind of stuck in. Perhaps you're putting off a big decision. I know there'll be a lot of young people as part of the church that are thinking about their next steps. Perhaps you're putting off that decision to go off to university or do an apprenticeship or whatever it might be. Perhaps that's your boat you need to step out from, because that's where the tension is. And you may have this what if moment in those moments where Jesus is calling you to something better. Calling you to step out of a situation of perceived safety, one we've kind of convinced ourselves with, but he's actually holding you back. And he's calling you out to come, to leave that behind, because he knows there's more to life than sitting in the boat. He has something even better for each one of us. And so let's go back to Peter. Peter decides in his what if moment, wait, I'm going overboard. He must have been afraid of what was going to happen. Of course he would have, but he just goes for it and he takes that step as the verses continue. Then Peter got out of the boat, walked on water and came toward Jesus. The reality is, as he climbs overboard, he takes one step. And often when we think about stepping out of a comfort zone, if we're going to release something that is holding us back or move away from something that is kind of limiting us, it can feel massive, it can feel huge, it can feel like a huge leap. But ultimately it starts with one step and then another. And each time we take a step, we overcome the fear of what if, and we grow. And before we know it, we can be walking on water, whatever that might look like for you. So Peter's doing well. And then as the verses say, it goes on. But then he saw the wind. He was afraid and beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Peter sees the wind. Actually, physically, nothing has changed. The wind and the waves were always there. Even when he made the decision to go overboard, they were there. But Peter's focus switches away from Jesus and is distracted by the waves and the wind. And John Ortberg, in this book that I referenced earlier, he pitches it like this. Do you remember Wile E. Coyote from the cartoons? Anybody under kind of 30 is thinking, who? So Wile E. Coyote, he runs off the cliff chasing the roadrunner, and without noticing, he's fine. He's still pumping his legs and he's totally fine, but it's when he looks down, he starts to plummet. Apparently, it's not the running off the cliff that does him in. It's the realizing that he has. And this is really key. You see, this is really key. What's really key is this. What you must learn to ignore is just as important as what you must learn to walk towards. Because it may be that you're walking in the right direction. But if you don't keep ignoring the unhelpful things around you, they can cause you to stumble and fall. And this is what happened to Peter. He sees the wind. And perhaps for us, the wind would translate to kind of setbacks, difficulties, obstacles we have to overcome. Perhaps it's old habits that we just can't let go of, addictions that we keep returning to. Perhaps it's feelings of guilt and doubt. And as Steve spoke about last week, this feeling of, I'm not good enough. These are the things that can actually help cause us to stumble. But fortunately, in Peter's situation, when he stumbles and falls and starts to sink, he's walking towards Jesus. And he's close enough to Jesus for Jesus to catch him. As it says here, Jesus immediately reached out and caught him. "You have so little faith," Jesus said. "Why did you doubt me?" And Jesus asks this because all Jesus asks of us is to have the faith to come. Why? Because he has the grace to catch us. He only asks us to come because he has the grace to catch us. You see, our confidence, our own confidence, is not about being able to walk perfectly in our own strength, but is in the confidence in the fact that Jesus is close enough and wholly adequate to catch us. And at this moment, Peter realizes that he doesn't need to have faith in his own feet. He just needs to have faith in Jesus' hand. So at this point, Jesus helps Peter to get back in the boat. And Peter finds himself back in the boat. And after this, his own experience kind of led to a revelation when he's back in the boat. And it says this, "Truly, you are the Son of God." At this moment, the penny drops. You know, and it's the same for you. That if you get out of your boat and you trust God, walk or fall, your life will change. And every step of faith that you take will enlarge your view of God and deepen your relationship with him. So let's get really up to us sitting here in Debenham. There'll be some aspect, I'm sure, in your life in which God may be calling you. And he invites you to walk with him, to just come. He's inviting you to walk on the water with him, and he's inviting you to come, as simple as that. No instructions, no details. We don't know the end point. We don't know the exact plan. He's just saying, come. You see, the reason for that is the water is where Jesus is. He isn't in the boat. And if we stay in the boat, then we can't fully experience what he has for us. So in order to do this, we need to take the first step, a step of action. You know, if we're going to achieve more than you can ever imagine, if you want to live your life to the fullest, if you want to let go of situations and emotions that limit you, you need to get your feet wet. 2 weeks ago, Steve Fennin, he concluded our previous series, Catalysts. And he finished with a talk called Brave Moves, which was really, really closely connected with what I've been talking about today. And through this talk, Steve, I think, raised a fantastic phrase that really resonated with me. But he also challenged us with two questions in that talk, at the end of that talk. And I think it's right to bring those up again today. Sometimes God just wants to, we don't listen very well, so we need to keep repeating certain things. So I've adapted these questions to what kind of the topic I've been talking about today. But this is what Steve said. Steve said, a life of faith demands us to make a brave move. And I don't want to underplay that actually perhaps for you sitting here today, getting out of your boat will be a massive brave move that's kind of resonating in your head. But a life of faith demands us to make that brave move. And the two challenges and the questions that I'd like you to consider that you may have already been considered since when Steve raised them a couple of weeks ago was this. When was the last time you stepped out of your boat, if ever? And secondly, in your what if moment, what will be your next step? So practically, what could be your next step? You know, perhaps for you, that's a big life decision that you need to make, that you've been mulling over, that you've been trying to ignore, push back to the back of your brain, that, you know, trying to do anything else but think about that big thing. And yes, you need to pray into that. You need to talk to people about that. But what is the brave move? What is this step of action that you need to take in that situation? Perhaps for you, you've been coming here to the Forge for a while. And you've been coming on a Sunday and you've been enjoying it. But perhaps for you, that step is to become more involved here. Perhaps going a bit deeper. Is that joining a small group? Is that giving of your money regularly, which feels really scary? Is it actually giving of your time and signing up to be a volunteer of what goes on here and really be a contributor to what goes on and contribute to what we're doing here at the Forge? Perhaps for you, you have been exploring faith. Perhaps you've been going to Alpha or, you know, whatever it is, or been, you know, you're by yourself, been exploring faith in a deeper sense. Is baptism a step for you? Well, in Easter Sunday, we will be holding baptisms. Is that your next step? Is that you climbing out of your boat? Or perhaps you're sat here this morning and you really don't know what on earth you're doing here because you've not really ever come to church before. Perhaps you've just come because your mum asked you. And you're wondering what on earth all of this is all about. Or perhaps you've been coming for a couple of weeks and you've been exploring, but you're still, yeah. But perhaps something is starting to resonate with you. You're getting a sense that something needs to change in your life. Perhaps your next step is to share that this morning. To ask someone to pray for you, perhaps for the first time. And that feels weird. And perhaps it's about asking and accepting Jesus in your life for the very first time here this morning. That could be your next step. And as I've listed some of those things, and perhaps as I've been talking about some of these topics, as I've listed examples, perhaps this what if moment is raising a panic in your head because you know what God is talking to you about. You might know what you're being called to do. You might know what your next step perhaps could be. But you're in that what if dilemma, and perhaps right now your what if dilemma is this: what if I can't? What if I can't? Well, Peter would say, what if you can? Or perhaps you're thinking, what if I do step out, but I fall, I fail? Well, perhaps you should consider, what if Jesus catches you? You know, Jesus' invitation to come is not about flawless steps. It's about trusting in Jesus. He's the one who defies the waves. He doesn't expect you to do it alone. And if you respond to his invitation, perhaps you will walk on water. You'll experience something beyond your imagination. And even if you stumble, Jesus is there. He's in the water. He's not in the boat. And you won't fall alone. Through his love and grace, Jesus will catch you. And you'll experience this overwhelming grace in your life from Jesus. And when you experience this, just like Peter, you'll have a deeper relationship with God. You see, sometimes the way to a deeper faith is just to fall in the right place and have Jesus catch you, close to Jesus. And as I conclude, I invite you to think about what is your own what-if moment. I invite you to really identify what your boat is, and perhaps that's going to take some soul searching like it was for me. What is holding you back from stepping out in faith? Because remember, it's not about how well you walk on water. It's about knowing that Jesus is more than able to catch you if you fall. And who knows, you might just find yourself walking on water.